Please note that this is an extended amateur radio newsline report and contains three breaks. Newscast begins after the tone. Amateur radio newsline report number 1867 with a release date of May 24th, 2013 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham radio joins other services in responding to tornadoes in the Great Plains. Israeli hams get limited access to 5 megahertz. A distracted driving law that exempts ham radio is signed by Hawaii's governor. A major de-expedition to Heard Island is delayed, and an in-depth look at Hamvention 2013. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1867, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Several radio services, including broadcasters and hams, responded as several days of severe weather, including tornadoes, hit the Central Plains. Amateur Radio Newsline's Mark Abramovich, NT3V, is here with what we know so far.
The pictures seen on cable and network news channels of the devastation in Oklahoma have been gut-wrenching, but emergency officials are saying the warnings and local broadcast coverage by radio and television probably saved hundreds, if not thousands, of lives. Amateur radio played a part in the initial hours after the tornado went through the community of Moore in the Oklahoma City area. Kevin Odell, N0IRW, is the American Radio Relay League section manager for Oklahoma. He tells Newsline in an interview that the real call-up came through the Amateur Radio Emergency Service for operators to assist the Red Cross chapter.
We've had one specific request of ARES to assist with the Red Cross in communications between the chapter office and their feeding area down at the incident command post, and we secured from that.
Odell says the operation secured Wednesday night.
I do know of a couple of instances where there have been some other folks that have been involved, not for any real length of time, but once ComEl got their systems up and running, everything was in pretty good shape.
Odell, who lives about 75 miles north of the tornado-affected region of the state, says while the devastation is vast, it is confined to a narrow area, and that enabled emergency crews to keep police, fire, and emergency radios up and running and restore wireless service rapidly.
What a lot of people don't understand is that this is a 17-mile-long track, but it's only a couple of miles wide. You get outside of that, and things work pretty well. So just the communication within that strip is the only thing that's been really questioned.
Odell says the Oklahoma City Moore area has lots of experience dealing with tornadoes.
This isn't their first rodeo. These people know what they're doing. They're very good at it. The communication systems, because of this and because of events that they've had in the past, especially the May 3rd, 1999 storm that went basically through a very similar part of Moore, you know, a lot of the communication systems have been hardened a whole lot and have also been decentralized so that the infrastructure issue isn't quite as big a deal as you would have in a much broader situation.
Odell describes the people of Oklahoma as resilient, although he concedes there are a couple people who lost their homes in 1999 and on the same site in the most recent tornado. Odell says he wouldn't be surprised if some of them took this second hit as a divinely inspired message to move elsewhere. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V.
As this newscast is being prepared, rescue workers are still sifting through the rubble of the twisters that brought death and destruction to that area. Meantime, ham radio operators remain on alert in case that they are needed.
Some breaking news on the propagation front. I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. CQ Magazine reports via its Facebook page that a strong M5.0 solar flare occurred on Wednesday, May 22nd at around 1332 UTC. Its origin was on sunspot number 1745 on the west side of the sun. A CME, or coronal mass ejection, was projected into space and is clearly visible in images from NASA's SOHO spacecraft. If the plasma is directed earthward, the CME could soon trigger aurora and other geomagnetic activity, including some level of high-frequency radio degradation. If you're on Facebook, be sure to like the CQ Magazine page to have alerts like this show up in your timeline. More information on this event as well as sunspots and solar flares in general, is online at sunspotwatch.com. I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. Jim?
The Israelis radio regulator has decided to grant temporary permissions on an individual application basis for use of 8 discrete frequencies between 5298.5 and 5.047 megahertz. These channels are available to general and extra-class licensee holders. The maximum allowable power is 100 watts peak envelope power measured at the transmitter rather than effective radiated power from the antenna. The Israel Radio Amateur Club is the nation's national amateur radio society. It says that its main goal in obtaining this allocation is to experiment for local short-range emergency communications readiness and that long-distance activity is a side product. The validity of this temporary authority is given from application's approval date until middle of March 2014, but it appears that this could be extended. Operations on a secondary basis and was coordinated with the Spectrum Committee representing primary and other relevant Spectrum users. More information online now at tinyurl.com/Israel-5-megahertz. Mobile ham radio operations have received an exclusion as Hawaii's Governor Neil Abercrombie signed House Bill number 980 on Monday, May 20th. This is the state's new law that takes effect on July the 1st and enforces a ban on the use of mobile electronics and places strict limitations on text messaging while operating a motor vehicle. Specifically, with certain exceptions, House Bill 980 prohibits the use of cell phones and other mobile electronic devices while operating a vehicle statewide. It specifically prohibits activities such as texting, instant messaging, gaming, and emailing, which takes a driver's eyes and mind off the road and the hands off the steering wheel. The use of hands-free devices remain permitted, but a new change is a restriction for those under the age of 18 years of age. According to Ben Hashiro, AH6RH, the exemption for mobile amateur radio use, which was already available in 4 counties, has survived the 2013 state legislature and remains now in effect statewide. Hashiro, who is the Hawaii State Civil Defense ARES Emergency Coordinator and the State Civil Defense ARES Coordinator, praised the amateur radio operators who since 2009 have been involved in a legislative effort to preserve mobile amateur radio privileges. More is on the web now at tinyurl.com/Hawaii-cell-law-signed. Some breaking news in the world of DX, this with word that a planned Cordell expedition operation from Heard Island has been postponed until January of 2015. According to the expedition organizer Roger Schmider, KK6EK, and co-planner Rich Holock, KY6R, the primary reason for the delay was the cost of using the preferred vessel, the Marion de France, to put the team on the island for the required time. In a note to the Ohio Penn DX newsletter and published by the Southgate News, KK6EK and KY6R says that despite extensive negotiations and rescheduling of the cruise, it became clear that the cost of using this vessel will exceed $1 million. Therefore, the total cost for the project would be about $1.5 million, and that even increasing the team size to 50 to partially cover this cost was not enough. So the planners reluctantly concluded that sponsorship at this level would be impossible. KK6EK and KY6R say that they therefore decided to delay the de-expedition to early 2015 to allow more time to restructure the project. It'll also give them the ability to locate a more suitable vessel and bring the cost more in line with the projected available resources. According to Club Log, Heard Island is number 7 on its DXCC Most Wanted list. The operation's website is at www.heardisland.org. A detailed account of this problem being incurred in planning this important de-expedition is online at tinyurl.com/heard-rescheduled. And we'll have more DX-related news near the end of this week's newscast. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline. Heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the N8URW repeater serving Jackson, Michigan. The 2013 Dayton Hamvention will likely go down in the amateur radio history books as one of the best. And while it'll be a while before we know the actual number of those attending, all indicators say it was again a banner year. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, reports.
It was rather foggy on Friday, May 17th, when the doors opened at the Hare Arena for the 2013 Dayton Hamvention. But the gloom outside was quickly replaced by crowds of hams inside the showplace, ready for 3 days of ham radio fun. One of these was Hollywood producer Dave Bell, W6AQ.
So the first thing I do is down the ramp to deposit my ticket stub, my winning ticket stub, which is never, ever won, and then on into the main arena, which I call the snake pit because it is always full, and this Friday morning it was even fuller than usual. It was packed. I turned around and went out the way I came in and into a relatively empty hallway to go around to where the rest of the merchants were. And it was busy over there, too. I think the merchants must have done a gangbusters business this time.
According to several longtime attendees, the numbers appeared good for an opening day, as it's been the past 2 or 3 years. The ARRL reports that its expo area drew a substantial crowd with popular activities such as the W1AW 75th Anniversary Exhibit, the Youth Lounge, and spectral purity testing provided courtesy of the ARRL lab. And as usual, lines formed immediately for DXCC card checking. There were several new products introduced at Hamvention 2013, and while we do not have time this week to cover all of them, perhaps one of the most interesting was Yaesu's new high-frequency transceiver. Tim Factor, KT7F of Yaesu, described the new entry.
We've come out with a very new HF rig, which is called the FTDX 1200, which is a entry-level TFT screen radio that last year, you may remember, your viewers may remember, we came out with the FTDX 3000, which was an opportunity for those who like the 5000 to have a price point a little less. So this year we just topped that with now an entry-level TFT screen with a built-in band scope and the kind of features that you would find on the higher price range.
Not to be outdone, ICOM was there with two new products. The company showcased both its ID51A portable and IC7100 mobile radios. Both are D-Star ready, and as such, they facilitate clear digital voice, short data messages, worldwide D-Star linked repeater access over the internet, and more. The IC7100 is particularly of interest in that it combines VHF and UHF analog and digital with all-band, all-mode mobile operations using a new slanted control head with what is the amateur industry's first touchscreen interface. This is the radio many saw previewed on the Ham Nation Internet TV show a few months ago. ICOM, along with several other manufacturers, were also prize contributors to one of the highlights of the Hamvention for over a quarter of a century, that being the Youth Forum hosted by New York educator Carol Perry, WB2MGP. This session usually pulls one of the largest crowds of any session, and 2013 was no exception.
Well, this year was a banner year for the Youth Forum. It was our 26th year, and we had close to 300 people in what I refer to as the love audience, those who come out to support the kids. I had six young speakers aged 10 to 18 who were phenomenal, gave phenomenal presentation. We had a scientist doing a live demonstration on cloaking, a new technology, and he tied it into his experience coming from his childhood involved with amateur radio. And we had 22 radios that were donated by the manufacturers, ICOM, Kenwood, and MFJ. And it was simply wonderful.
Meantime, over in the ARRL Expo area, there was also an emphasis on youth, and according to the league's president, Kay Craigie, N3KN, this young people's interest in ham radio bodes well for the future.
And one of the things I think is most positive is that young people who are in technical and engineering fields get amateur radio today. A lot of them are going to be spending their careers in the wireless industry, so radio makes sense to them in a way that it may not have done 20 or 25 years ago when everything was computer programming.
Even though the theme of this year's Hamvention was DX, there was a lot there dealing with ham radio technology as well. One of the most interesting high-tech displays was over at the AMSAT booth, where AMSAT North America had the engineering model of the Fox 1 satellite on display. The satellite is presently scheduled to fly in November 2014. But for the average ham in the street, it was a book that caught a lot of attention. The Heil Ham Radio Handbook, Edition 2, is a newly revised version of Bob Heil, K9 EID's earlier work, but updated for a ham radio in the 21st century. And according to K9 EID, this was for him a labor of love.
The big focus here for us this year is our book. And thanks to a lot of people, Stephen Kenford being probably one of the most valuable, we were able to take our book of 1976 and we've enhanced it. A lot of the old stuff left there, but we also put a lot of new stuff in it, and it's really been successful here. Everybody's thrilled with it, and I'm honored to bring things to this industry that haven't been here before.
Thanks, Bob, for your compliment. I can tell you that working with you on this project was one that I enjoyed very much. There's lots more to tell you about Hamvention 2013, but that's all the time we have right now. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB, in Ham Radio City, USA.
Stephen will be back next week with more on Hamvention 2013. Meanwhile, if you were not there and didn't see any of the live streaming of this year's events, there's still a way to get a peek at some of the highlights in a slideshow posted on YouTube by Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB. Just take your web browser to tinyurl.com/freeze-frame-video. Sit back and enjoy. Turning to other events on the Ham Radio social calendar, the 8th Annual Northern Nevada Swap Meet is slated for Saturday, June 1st at the Brad Hollander N7 RCA Ranch in the city of Minden. That's about 15 miles south of Carson City. Anyone interested in radio from the latest and greatest to old boat anchors is welcome. A map to contact information or online at www.n7rca.info. The SEA PAC CPAC Amateur Radio Convention takes place in Seaside, Oregon, May the 31st to June the 2nd. Now, CPAC is the Northwest's largest amateur radio gathering, with communications equipment dealers and factory representatives on hand to demonstrate the very latest in ham radio technology. Also, seminars will be held on emergency communications, digital communications, the National Electrical Code for amateur radio, and there will also be amateur radio licensing testing. For more information on this fun event, take your browser to cpac.org. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline. With links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org. And being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. A Pennsylvania Citizens Band radio operator has been issued an $18,000 notice of apparent liability for several violations of Part 95 of the FCC rules. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, reports.
In its May 14th order, the FCC alleges that Pittsburgh resident Nathaniel Johnson failed to comply with restricted hours of station operation as required in an official notice. Also, that he failed to make his CB station available for inspection by authorized FCC representatives. This story goes back to January 19, 2012. That's when the FCC received a complaint alleging that Nathaniel Johnson's CB station was causing interference to his neighbor's telephone and television reception. When agents in the Enforcement Bureau's Philadelphia office attempted to conduct an on-scene inspection at Johnson's residence on February 16, 2012, no one answered the door. So on March 19, 2012, the Philadelphia office sent a warning letter to Johnson, directing him to contact the Philadelphia office within 10 calendar days to schedule an inspection. The warning letter also specified that if the harmful interference continued and arrangements were not made with the Philadelphia office to schedule an inspection, the commission might impose restricted hours of operation for his CB station. Johnson did not contact the Philadelphia office to schedule an inspection as directed. The pattern repeated itself even after the FCC sent Johnson two separate warning letters and imposed quiet hours on his operation. On October 11, 2012, agents from the Philadelphia office performed an on-scene investigation to confirm the source of continuing interference to televisions and telephones in Nathaniel Johnson's neighborhood. At 9:55 a.m., during the quiet hours period, the agents monitored multiple radio transmissions on the frequencies 27.025 MHz, 27.055 MHz, and 27.015 MHz. They then T-hunted the interference directly to Johnson's residence. Agents then knocked multiple times on the door, but no one answered, but the transmissions on those three frequencies ceased. The agents left copies of the June 12th warning letter on Johnson's front door, back door, and in his mailbox to remind him of the operational restrictions and directive to immediately contact the Philadelphia office to schedule an inspection. However, the FCC says that to the day it issued the notice of apparent liability, that Nathaniel Johnson has still not contacted the Philadelphia office, and that the office continues to receive interference complaints concerning Johnson's CB station operation. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
In addition to the $18,000 proposed fine, which he was given the customary 30 days to pay, the FCC has also ordered Johnson to submit a written statement signed under penalty of perjury confirming compliance to the quiet hours restriction. He's also ordered to specify a date and a time no later than 45 calendar days from issuance of the NAL when the FCC agents can again inspect his CB radio station. Ham radio volunteers in Southern California are needed to provide communications for the 2013 Special Olympics Summer Games. The dates are June the 8th and 9th, with the venue being held at the California State University in the city of Long Beach. More than 1,100 athletes from throughout the region will showcase their determination, courage, and skills at this summer's games. The event's free. It's open to the public. If you or your group is available to volunteer, please contact Mark Litike. He's KE6TNM by email to mlitike@holdenandrew.com. Some names in the news. First up is FCC Commissioner Mignon Clyburn, who became the acting chair of the agency effective Monday, May the 20th. She's temporarily replacing former FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski, who retired from that position on Friday, the May 17th. Clyburn's the first woman to hold that post and will continue to helm the agency until President Obama's nominee for chairman Tom Wheeler can receive his nomination hearing. According to a Senate Commerce Committee spokesman, that's not likely to happen any earlier than sometime in June. Also up for grabs is the seat of the now-retired Commissioner Robert McDowell, who is headed for a new position at the Hudson Institute. That could take from several weeks to several months, and until that time, at least one of the two vacant positions can be filled, and the FCC will be operating with a bare minimum of three seated commissioners that's required for the quorum. Innov Antennas Limited founder Justin Johnson, G0KSC, has been awarded the Harold Rose Plate by the Radio Society of Great Britain. This is in recognition of Justin's many contributions to 50 megahertz antenna technology in the amateur radio community. The award citation was presented to G0KSC at the RSGB's annual meeting in April. This is considered to be a very prestigious honor and was made in recognition of Justin's years of design, development, and teaching of the tools and techniques that have led to the introduction of several novel antenna designs. These include such antennas as the loop-fed array and the optimized wideband low-impedance Yagi. CQ Magazine has announced its 8 inductees to its Amateur Radio Hall of Fame. It's also adding 2 members each to the CQ DX and Contest Hall of Fame. The 2013 inductees to the CQ Radio Hall of Fame are longtime amateur radio industry leader Evelyn Garrison, WS7 Alpha, the former QST Magazine managing editor Joel Kleinman, N1BKE, well-known BBC correspondent Lori Margolis, G3UML/GPC3L, former Wireless Institute of Australia leader and chairman of the IARU Region 3, Michael Owen, VK3KI, Harry Rubenstein, the X9 Echo Echo Victor, who is credited as the inventor of the printed circuit and several other devices, journalist, author, and historian Walker Tompkins, K6ATX, famed guitarist and performer Joel Walsh, WB6ACU, and former CQ novice editor Bill Welsh, W6DDB. Evelyn Garrison, Joel Kleinman, Michael Owen, Harry Rubenstein, and Bill Welsh are being honored posthumously for their contributions. The 2013 inductees to the CQDX Hall of Fame are Vladimir Bielkov, UA4WHK/AC4LN, and Robert Gary Dixon, K4MQG. CQ Contest Hall of Fame inductees are Dale Green, VE7SV, and Charles Fulp, K3WW. Formal ceremonies to the CQ Contest and the CQ DX Halls of Fame took place at last week's Dayton Hamvention. A more detailed description of this year's inductees will appear in the July 2013 issue of CQ Magazine. With you 52 weeks a year, every year since 1976. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. A bit of radio history. Were you aware that the first reporting by wireless of a sporting event took place in Dublin Bay during the Kingstown Yacht Regatta way back in July of 1898? It did, and plans are afoot for ham radio to commemorate that event. The story goes this way. At the request of the Express newspaper, famed inventor Guglielmo Marconi installed wireless equipment aboard the vessel the Flying Huntress and transmitted reports to the harbor master's office in the town of Kingstown, which is now known as Dunluegher. The results were posted in a window and published even before the yacht's return to port. Now, in 2013, to commemorate the events, Ireland's Howth Martello Radio Group and the South Dublin Radio Club plan to set up two special event stations. As the races took place off of Howth Head, one station will operate from the Martello Tower in Howth and the other from the Maritime Museum in Dunluegher. The weekend of July 20th through the 21st is proposed for this operation, but it has to be added that planning is at an early stage. These things are now subject to change. The new NASA Wheeled Explorer has been released here on Mother Earth, named Grover, which is an acronym for the Goddard Remotely Operated Vehicle for Exploration and Research. The radio-equipped rover will explore Greenland's ice sheets to better understand how they form and how quickly they may be melting. Grover was developed by teams of students at the 2010 and 2011 summer engineering boot camps at Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. According to a release from NASA, the 6-foot-tall, 800-pound vehicle is equipped with ground-penetrating radar that will send pulses into the ice sheets and measure the reflections to tell researchers about the characteristics of the snow and ice layers. While radio-equipped, Grover is solar-powered and semi-autonomous. It begins its first mission on Friday, May the 3rd, and will continue through Saturday, June the 8th. More about this Earth-based NASA Explorer is online at tinyurl.com/meet-grover. Hams worldwide are invited to submit papers for publication in the printed proceedings of the joint ARRL and Tucson Amateur Packet Radio Digital Communications Conference. The conference slated for September the 20th through the 22nd in Seattle, Washington, but you do not have to attend to submit a paper for consideration. Submissions will not be edited, and the authors will retain all the rights. If you have such a presentation that you'd like to see included, please send it before July 31st to Mady Weinberg, ARRL Headquarters, 225 Main Street, Newington, Connecticut, 06111, or by email to matey@arrl.org. The National Amateur Radio Society of Germany says that following a successful test, certain Deutscher Amateur Radio Club awards will become available as PDF printable files at reduced fees, and payments via PayPal will be accepted. At the same time, fees for printed awards were adjusted to their actual costs. The DARC says that as of June onwards, printed awards will cost €7, while an emailed PDF file will be available for only €3. Implementation of this new payment system will begin with all Worked All Europe awards, with others to follow. Bill Moore, NC1L, at the ARRL DXCC desk reports that an almost three-decade-old operation from Cocos Island has been approved for DXCC credit. According to Moore, over the years, some applicants have had the TI-9CCC operation rejected in their DXCC application, mostly due to an incorrect date period. Now, the issue of the dates for this operation has been resolved. If you had this operation rejected and your confirmation falls between February the 15th through February the 28th of 1984, you're invited to send an email to bmoore@arrl.org to be placed on the list for an update to your record. In DX, word from OD5SK is currently active from Jordan as JY8KS. He's reported to be on the HF bands only. You can QSL via IZ8CLM. Five English amateurs will use the call sign SZ8S from the Greek island of Samos through the 30th of May. This will count as EU-049 for the Islands on the Air award. QSLs go via G1LAT for direct cards or via M0SCG for bureau cards. VE3DZ will be active from Bermuda through May the 30th as VP9FOC. He'll be operational on all the high-frequency bands, and you can QSL via his home call sign. DJ2II will visit IOTA reference EU-042 through May the 30th, working stroke P on 80 through 10 meters. He'll be using single sideband and CW only, QSL via DJ2II, either direct or via the bureau. K9VV and WP2XX will be visiting the Radio Reef DXers Superstation at St. Croix Island from May the 21st through the 28th. They'll be on the air with their own call signs as KP2M for the CQWPXCW contest. QSL for KP2M go via the Logbook of the World or direct via AI4U. UT6UD will be operation from Hiva Ula Island in the Marquesas from July the 7th through the 13th and from Rurutu and the Austral Islands from July the 14th through the 22nd, operating stroke F0. He'll be active on 30 through 10 meters on CW, single sideband, and RIDI. QSL via his home call of UT6UD. Lastly, WB8BZK will be on the airstroke VE3 from Seska Ganja Lake in Ontario, Canada, between May the 26th and the 31st. He'll be operating only on 6 meters, primarily on 50.135 megahertz, running single sideband and CW. Operating times are tentatively each morning at 12:30 GMT and then again between 22:30 and 2300 GMT each evening. If you make contact, please QSL with a self-addressed USA stamped envelope to WB8BZK at his address on QRZ.com. And finally this week, no report on the Dayton Hamvention would be complete without a few words from someone who has quite literally devoted his entire life and professional career to amateur radio. Here's a quick assessment of this year's Dayton Ham Radio Group from Chip Margelli, K7JA.
Seen a lot of excited people this weekend looking to put up new antennas or get new radios or learn something new. The theme of the convention this year is DX, and to me, DX is what ham radio is all about. It's right at the heart and soul of everything to do with ham radio. Just everybody seems to be having a great time learning, seeing, meeting up with old friends and just having a ball in Dayton.
Thank you, Chip, and our thanks to all the organizers of Hamvention 2013 for yet another great show. And lest we forget, mark your calendars now with the dates of the next May 16th, 17th, and 18th Hamvention 2014. We will see you there. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline at arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, a reminder that there's only about a week and a half left to nominate a young ham age 18 or under for this year's Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award. The closing date is midnight, May 30th, and any nominations postmarked or sent to us electronically after that date will not be counted for this year's judging. This year's winner will receive an all-expense-paid trip to the Huntsville Ham Fest, courtesy of Yaesu USA, a week at Space Camp Huntsville from CQ Magazine, a prize of ham radio gear, and a plaque commemorating the event from us here at the Amateur Radio Newsline. Full details and a nominating form are on our website at arnewsline.org/YHOTY. We look forward to receiving your nominations. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at our editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73 from Florida's Treasure Coast, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013. All rights are reserved.